I want to welcome back to Inside Track CD2 candidate Eric Rudin for his second visit to our show. Eric is a third-generation Tucsonan. He grew up in Tucson as a Far East Sider and attended Sorrel High School. Go Cougars, right?
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah. Eric owns two successful businesses in Southern Arizona. I think probably he's proudest of being a father to a very talented daughter who is now off to college. And for 10 years, he volunteered as a softball coach, helping high school kids reach their collegiate dreams. His family was hardworking and far from wealthy. Eric started working at age 14 for his granny, cleaning abandoned homes. Now, his grandmother taught Mr. Rudin how to use a hammer and what it was like to put in a hard day's work. His big break was when he got a job that paid $6 an hour as a helper in the pest control industry. This turned out to be a life-changing job because he advanced quickly and the company became one that he was vice president of, managing more than 100 people. After achieving some modest success, Eric went back to school and earned a bachelor's degree in business management with an emphasis on project management. Today, he's the president of one of Tucson's leading pest control companies, and you see his men on the streets and all the time driving around to their various jobs, and some of you may have them service your home or business. Eric has said that his experiences as a struggling young person, business owner, coach, and volunteer have prepared him well to serve Southern Arizona with common sense solutions. Welcome back, Eric.
I appreciate the time.
Yeah. Hey, you appeared on Inside Track about 6 weeks or so ago. Lots and lots of things have changed. What have you learned about CD2 since we last spoke together?
Well, it's a very diverse district. Some of the things that I think are important that I've been talking to folks is I spent a lot of time talking about the new commercial port of entry that they're trying to do in the Douglas region, try to promote a little bit more economic trade between Mexico and the United States. Trying to learn the ins and outs of that process. They've been trying to get that project off the ground for many years, and I think that's going to help us economically. Obviously, water rights are a huge deal for our community. We've been focusing on that. And then, you know, I've been trying to reflect a little bit on some of my downtime of how to be a better representative, and I've been looking at some of our Arizona delegation and seeing who's effective, who's not, and how we can get legislation passed to help our community. And I've really kind of come up with a kinship with Dr. Paul Gosar, who's kind of a legislative machine and does a great job for his district, and I'd like to emulate that for ours.
If you emulate Dr. Gosar, I think you will have a very successful career in Congress. Let's take a look at the issues when you decided to run for Congress. Could you have ever imagined a mess like the Wuhan virus?
No, it actually has caught me off guard, and I think a lot of campaigners. I actually am more concerned less about the virus today than the mess of our political figures and how they handle the virus, but it's been shocking to say the least.
So the Wuhan virus has wreaked havoc on the health of thousands, if not millions. If you're elected to Congress, you may need to deal with the continued cost in lives and dollars of the deficits that have been piled onto our already enormous national debt. How does Congress prevent another health disaster like the Wuhan virus from happening again, Eric?
Well, I think there's a couple things that need to happen. One, let's not make it political. It started out as a political process and is continuing on as a political process. We have to realize that viruses do happen. You know, we had to go through SARS and Ebola, H1N1, and a variety of other viruses in the past. And I think we need to learn from our mistakes, where we don't isolate the population as a whole, but we isolate to the vulnerable and the people that may be susceptible to the virus. So I think we have to learn from our mistakes, because shutting down the economy completely has actually, I think, provided more damage. I mean, murder rate is up right now, suicide rate is up right now, drug use is up right now, and there's a lot of underlying health risks besides the virus that are impacting our communities.
Yeah, that's true. So the cost of fixing our economy has been horrific with the shutdown that occurred. How do we recover the economic cost of the virus to our economy and the nation?
Well, that's going to take some time. I mean, the first thing is we need to get businesses operating again. We have a lot of selective such shutdowns that are going on. You cannot legislate an economy. It hasn't worked in the past, and it won't work moving forward. So I think we need to focus there. I think secondly, we need to focus on getting people to work and jobs. If we don't have people working, bringing in tax revenue, there's very little we can do as a government to continually move forward.
Unemployment benefits end shortly, and that's really, I think, going to be when the rubber hits the road, don't you think?
Absolutely. They're supposed to expire on the 31st. They're actually going to expire just a little bit sooner because right. of the pay cycle, but unfortunately, there are people in Congress right now that are trying to get that extended all the way through the end of the year, which would be absolutely crushing to our economy.
Another issue unknown to you when you started to run was the death of George Floyd, the violent impact on major cities across America from Black Lives Matter, anti-American mobs, a killing of innocent victims and our first responders, tearing down monuments and defacing our country's freedom-loving legacy. Now, if you become the party's nominee in August, someone is bound to ask you what should be done to eliminate what has been referred to as systematic racism in America. How would you answer that question, Eric?
Well, I don't think we're in a racist nation, first of all. So I balk at the question to begin with. I think we have some problems within our community, but I think most of them are socioeconomic based. There's a lot of communities that have impoverished areas, and they've been impoverished for decades. You look at a lot of these communities that have been having problems, and they have second, third generation welfare. And, you know, when you look at the leadership of these communities, they've done very little in 40 and 50 years to actually help them out of that state. So I would look to changing the economics of a region versus just going to the race card.
So is America a racist country?
No, I don't think so. I think actually America has been a leader of fighting racism. We have a long history of being the first in the world to overcome some of our racial divides. I mean, our founding fathers knew it when they did the Declaration of Independence. They were having this argument. We went through the Civil War and 600,000 people died trying to resolve the sins of the past. And, you know, the civil rights movement of the 60s was a big part of amending a lot of those racial issues. And, you know, I think we have to look to our past and look to our successes of overcoming racism. We're a country where, you know, we have people of a variety of backgrounds serving in Congress and the Supreme Court. I mean, Barack Obama was the highest person in the land as president of the United States. I mean, some of these athletes have been my heroes growing up, from Michael Jordan to Barry Sanders. I don't think we have a race problem. Do we have problems in the country? Absolutely. Is it an underlying racial tone? I don't believe so.
Yeah, Sebastian Gorka, who has a show on the Salem Radio Network, a national show, said the other day that if you think that racism is bad in America, go to France, where if you have a North African last name, your life is hell. And I see what goes on in Europe particularly. And, you know, they're very quiet right now because in those countries there really is a true undercurrent. Of racial divide, I think.
I would concur with that. I mean, a lot of people don't look at our history. A lot of people don't look at what happens in other countries. And people don't look at what kind of progress we've made within the United States. And I think we should be celebrating the progress and the things that we've done versus pointing out the negatives. That's just my opinion.
You might be asked your position on removal of monuments. How would you reply?
I'm very against the removal of monuments because you're tearing down our history. Those monuments are there in place because they tell a story of who we are and from our past. Now, I have no problem with amending our story if we feel that a monument could be possibly offensive. Then there's a process that you could do that through your city council and through your state representatives within your community. I would like to see, actually, that maybe we put up different monuments of people that have done well. If it's a situation where we want equality, then let's have that monument and that statue of Martin Luther King put up, and we can talk about his story and his success and the Rosa Parks and the people, the Frederick Douglasses that kind of changed our country. I think it's a situation that we think we'd be in a better place if we celebrated the good values of our country instead of tearing down the past so we don't repeat our sins.
So on monuments, and just real quickly, this just kind of came into my head. Here in Tucson, there's a statue of Pancho Villa on Kino Boulevard. Why in the we have enough problems in Tucson already. I mean, why a statue of Pancho Villa, a killer, a guy who attacked the United States, burned down a town, killed people? I mean, it's just, well, anyway. Okay, let's defunding police and abolishing ICE and CBB. Where are you on defunding police, and where are you on abolishing ICE and Customs and Border Patrol?
Yeah, it's ludicrous. Quite frankly, I've been astounded by, fortunately, our local mayor. She's in the controversy of not supporting the thin blue line, supporting the police. And quite frankly, we've seen the results here within our own community of what defunding police looks like. Our police department's been defunded, having less revenues every single year for about, it's been about 12 years straight, I think. And Raheena Romero has been directly responsible for that. And it's a situation that crime is up in our community, and I think it's like 120% higher than the national average. Police response times are not there. You know, you need people that can actually enforce the laws, and that includes ICE within the country and the Border Patrol protecting our borders. You can't just let people run rampant and do whatever they want without accountability, and the people in uniform keep us safe on a regular basis.
The Trump administration has built or is in the process of building nearly 300 miles of border barrier fencing. What more must be done to protect Arizonans on the border and inside the homeland?
Yeah, you know, I think there just needs to be a little bit more local control when it comes to this. I realize immigration is a federal issue, but riding along with Sheriff Annals down in Cochise County, they've been very effective at limiting border crossings, and one of their secret weapons is wildlife game cameras. They have four guys that go out and put these game cameras, and they put them into washes and gullies and those sort of things, and they actually catch more people than some of these big $3 million cameras that we put at the federal level. So I think when the federal people work with people boots on the ground, I think it actually works better in that process. And I hope if I was a federal legislator that I can show models that are very successful and working here in Southern Arizona to other communities, because I think there's some innovation there that's lower cost alternatives that actually save taxpayers money but get the result done.
The sheriff of Cochise County is quite a remarkable and effective leader. He's done good stuff. And you know, it's interesting, Eric, not all the solutions come from Washington. You know, as Ronald Reagan said, the nine most dangerous words of in the English language are, "I'm from Washington, I'm here to help you."
Yeah.
You have a career, a successful career. You have expertise in various areas. If you were elected to Congress, which committees would you desire to serve on if elected? And why should you be chosen for any of those?
Well, I mean, obviously a dream committee would be appropriations because they control so much of the spending, and I think you can have direct impact. It's tough as a freshman, but when you have a big flip in the House, occasionally that's available. I have a passion for budget, just because being a business owner, numbers and those sort of things, I think that's really important. And I think touring around Southern Arizona and determining what we have and looking at other successful legislators, I think other big committee assignments that I think would be good would be like natural resources, agriculture, and armed services, because those three committees really have a lot of influence, especially in an area like ours that have high military usage and a lot of agriculture and cattle and mining within our region. So those would be some committees that I think, you know, would suit well for a legislator of this area.
So right now, Republicans are in the minority in the U.S. House. Have you talked to anybody like Paul Gosar, for example, to figure out how you would navigate legislation important to Arizonans if the Republicans are in the minority again in 2021 when you take the oath of office?
Yeah. I think you have to be opportunistic in doing that through your committee assignments, because obviously the other party would end up controlling things. I hope that doesn't happen. But I think as a legislator, if you have projects and things that you think are important in communities, piggybacking that on other legislation that goes through and having it prepared. So being very active within your committee, and then you can work with people across the aisle within those small committees where you can't normally do it when you're going up against a speaker like Nancy Pelosi.
So I'm going to ask you a question, CD2. I have two sons. One is 40 years old. The other is 36. They're successful in their careers, and they pay into the system. How would you propose to fix Social Security so that you and my two sons, I'm going to be gone by then, but you and my two sons actually end up receiving their own Social Security benefits as bargained for when they paid into the system?
Yeah, that's going to take some major reform. I mean, the first thing is we got to open up that package because it gets automatically renewed on an annual basis. I know Mitt Romney isn't overly popular amongst all conservatives, but he actually proposed a bipartisan commission with the Senate and the House members in order to tackle this issue, which I have some interest in. There's kind of a all-of-the-above approach of a lot of things that you can do to amend Social Security. Some of them are tying that instead of just changing age numbers arbitrarily, tying it to life expectancy for your benefits coming through. There are people that want to raise revenues, and that includes raising taxes. I'm not a big fan of, but you know, when you say all solutions on a table, that is certainly there. Privatization of parts of Social Security, having opt-outs for people that are wealthy that just prefer not to have those taxes taken out, but then they lose the benefits. You get a net gain. There's a lot of different solutions. There's probably at least 20 different items that you can do to kind of push levers, push buttons to try to change that. But until you actually are sitting down, fortunately, with the other side, you're not going to be able to address this issue.
Do you agree with the Trump doctrine that we provide defense for our allies with equal participation as a percentage of each country's GDP? This is a big topic right now with our NATO allies.
Actually, I think it's genius. I think it's the first time that I've seen a president in modern history that actually held some of our partners across the world accountable. And so I agree with the doctrine 100%.
President Trump hasn't made friends even within our own party regarding deployment of our military forces. Would you support a war where America's interests were not the primary reason to risk our national treasures and risk another prolonged war like we've had in Afghanistan and Iraq?
Yeah, I'm against utilizing our forces unless it actually protects one of our allies that we have a deep interest in. Otherwise, it's a tough issue because it's defining what your interests are. Because, you know, we've had so many decades of fighting communism, the spread of communism. The United States has been used as a world police and those sort of things. But I think we have to be very judicious in how we use our armed services and our best resources, our people and our soldiers. And so I would always err on the side of caution and limiting those actions when possible.
There's lots of talk about building up a 355-ship Navy, also spending to build out our Space Force quickly and be in a position, if required, to fight on a level playing field with an aggressor nation in space. Are these concepts that, as a member of Congress, you would support?
I would generally be in favor of those concepts, and the reason being is that the best way that you can actually protect our troop is having big deterrents. And so when you have large tools and our enemies can see that we're well defended, they're not likely to mess with us. I mean, that was kind of one of the reasons we ended up winning the Cold War against the Soviet Union, is they couldn't keep up with the escalation of our military might, which actually collapsed their economy. So having strong armed forces is a natural deterrent and keeps us out of war.
Who's the number one great Satan in the world today?
Well, I know a lot of people would go to some terrible actors and foreign leaders, Hassan Rouhani, Xi Jinping with China. But I really think it's kind of the accountability of some of our American media. We don't hold people accountable and allow elected officials, especially those that they favor, to actively lie. And it tears us apart. It tears our community apart. And I actually think we have to look at ourselves as a nation to basically be more moral and accountable to each other and not just foster lies that divide our nation. I think you got to take care of home before you start blaming others in the world.
That's an interesting answer. I hadn't expected you to pivot in that direction. I appreciate your candor. Okay, so last question. With early voting starting now, what is the number one reason Eric Rudin should be elected to be the Republican candidate for Congress in CD2? The biggest reason?
The biggest reason is I'm the hardest working guy out there, and I will actively work every single day to help better our community. So it's not only my experience and what I've done and my accomplishments in the past. It really comes down to who's going to represent the people and work the hardest for our community every moment of the day.
Well, Eric, thanks very much. We're up against the clock, and we need to leave it there for now. Thanks for appearing on Inside Track.
Sounds good. Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate your time.